I'm Tiziana Deering.
She had, I mean, it was just hoarding everywhere, an infestation of rodents everywhere, and extreme paranoia back again. And there was a moment where I just sat down and cried because I was going to have to pull it together.
That is Boston City Councilor and mayoral candidate Michelle Wu last night, speaking with me about a challenging moment confronting her mother's mental illness. Our conversation was the first of two candidate town halls hosted by WBUR at City Space. The second one will be Boston City Councilor Nisa Sibey-George this Thursday, 7 p.m. We'd like to go out today with an excerpt from our hour-long conversation with Wu last night, which included our own questions and some submitted by audience members. And if you're a regular Radio Boston listener, you already know that if Wu is elected November 2nd, she will be the first many things. First elected woman, mother, person of color, Asian American mayor of Boston. These intersecting identities have been a key focus in this race between two very accomplished women. And I started last night by asking Michelle Wu, who does she tell herself she is?
I wake up every day and sometimes I'm still pretty shocked that I'm on this unexpected journey in politics and public service. At my core, I am still the daughter of immigrants who remembers what it was like growing up with all-powerful parents inside the safety of our home. But as soon as we crossed over the doorstep into the outside world, I would be pushed out front as the translator and interpreter for our family. And to know that the systems that we set up to help often can still feel so far away when you are caring for a loved one with mental illness or raising younger siblings in that context and trying to deal with all the many ways in which our challenges are overlapping. I wake up as a mom. That is probably, usually I wake up before I even want to because the kids have woken me up. They're 4 and 6, and it's a mad dash, a scramble. You think of it as 3 separate days that working parents have, right? Getting everyone off to school, then a sort of grown-up work day, and then the bedtime, dinner, bath time routines all together. And fundamentally, I'm still someone who believes that we need to meet people where they're at, because I've experienced the many ways in which when we are invisible and have that feeling of being unseen, unheard, in fact, we are off struggling in our own ways when we could come together and deliver big changes. That's what we've seen in the city council and in city government over 8 years now. And I'm excited for this chance to make sure that Boston not only looks different when it comes to our leadership, but is truly connected to our communities and getting City Hall out of City Hall into our neighborhoods.
You said that, you know, in your childhood, you saw your parents as all-powerful in the home. Do you think your kids see you in the home as all-powerful?
Oh, no. I'm a pushover in a lot of ways. The little one runs the family. He's 4 years old, and he knows all somehow already. I grew up in an immigrant household where my parents came with nothing in their pockets, not speaking English, and it was always just barely under the surface of every conversation we had how much they had sacrificed to come here. Right, 27 years old, they immigrated, left behind everyone they knew, the language, the culture, the support networks they had to start all over for this chance that the next generation, that my siblings and I, would be able to do a little better. And so that was always driving the expectations of my siblings and me in school and to one day get a job that would be enough to pay the bills, stable, and not get you in trouble. Right? So politics was supposed to be off the table for all of us. And I feel so blessed to be able to raise my two boys in this city, having experiences that I never imagined having, even as young children, living in a multi-generational household and having a sense that they belong in spaces where decisions are being made. They have both grown up, were both born since I joined the city council, were nursed on the council floor up with me at meetings, and are used to being passed around at meetings. And I hope that is the part of the culture change that we see when more working parents, especially working moms, are in positions of leadership as well.
So that's an emphasis on where they now see themselves as belonging. What do you think you're teaching them about where women belong with your career and with this this bid to be the first woman elected as mayor of the city of Boston.
They had to ask if boys were allowed to run for office as well. It's their default, right? The pronouns that they use, how they think about who belongs in these spaces, has been seeing many, many strong women all around them.
Yeah. Okay, so one last thing on this getting to know you, because we are now at a point where either you or Anissa Sibey George is going to be mayor, and people need to know who you are. It's been interesting because all of the candidates from before the preliminary arguably in many ways ran on who they were, including you. And there's much of your story that we know now. I wonder if there's a piece of your story you'd be willing to share that you haven't, about who you are, why you're running, how you've been shaped, something we don't know about you yet.
I think there are many stories that I carry that are related to the broad points that people might know about me. The fact that much of my journey was opened up or shaken onto a different path with my mom's experience of mental illness. I've, over the years, started to share a little bit more about the specific experiences that we've gone through, but there is so much that in the process of trying to help my sisters through, trying to keep the family going, there's many examples floating through my mind of just how desperate a family can feel in those moments. At one point, we've gone through these cycles of ups and downs with treatment, with being stable and then less stable. And, you know, when you're on a good part of the cycle, feeling like, you know, my mom saying, okay, now I'm done. I'm good now. Don't need to take any medication anymore. And so we've been through multiple iterations of different housing situations, different being on the edge of seeing her become unhoused. And there was one period where after she had become stable again, had been in Boston with us for some time, decided that she was, you know, all better and wanted to go back and live on her own again. And I am still, you know, at this point in my early 20s, trying to navigate what it means growing up in a culture where your parents are, your elders are really supreme, right? It's ultimately about filial piety and deferring to those who raised you and the ultimate respect that garners. And so when your mother in that situation says, I'm ready, I'm independent, and I'm doing this, I'm going back and living on my own again, you know, we said, okay, well, we'll see how it goes. And just very quickly, over a period of months, you know, went back during a school break to go check on her, and it was just hoarding everywhere, an infestation of rodents everywhere, and extreme paranoia back again, right? Saying, refuse to let anyone in the house to help take care of any of the situation. And there was a moment where I just sat down and cried because I was going to have to pull it together that weekend that I was home for a nice visit. I expected to be in a situation where I'd get to see, you know, how things were progressing, and it had all fallen apart. I went out to Home Depot, bought hundreds of mouse traps, laid them all, refreshed them, got rid of, disposed everything over and over and over again until it got a little bit more under control just over that weekend. And that was a moment where I knew I couldn't listen again. If there was another pushback of I'm good, I'm on my own, I'm going to do this, that was where it really flipped of, okay, I really have to step into this role now and be head of household and make sure that she is okay, even when she may think that there are spaces where she is still the mother. We are in a very different relationship now.
First, thank you for sharing that story. And second, I'm sorry that you had that experience. It makes me think of the power that people who have supported you have talked about that you bring into a room, this kind of unassuming power that in Anthony Brooks's profile of you this morning, somebody referred to you as a grenade, right? Small, but powerful. And do you think through those experiences, you found a different kind of power than other leaders have? How would it come into the office with you?
It's the power that I hear in our family stories all across the city. Right? When people are put in impossible situations, having to choose between putting food on the table or keeping a roof over their head because our systems have so failed, our families are still finding a way to put one foot in front of the other against all odds. And I know what that feels like to have to find it inside somewhere when you think there's nothing left to just make it happen because you're going to be there to take care of your family. And it just drives me that much more to make sure that we can do everything possible so that people don't have to be in those situations. This is the point of government, to do big things together that we can't do on our own, to put our collective power and resources and community together to ease that burden, to make it reasonable for a working mom who's trying to juggle childcare and school obligations for the kids and getting to work and earning that income. This is one of the wealthiest cities in the world. We are in a mecca of higher education and healthcare and so many resources. And yet, when you hear the stories of how big the gaps are in our city, when you set foot and walk into each one of our Boston public high schools, as I have, to see firsthand, it is heartbreakingly unacceptable, the situation that so many of our families are in, because we have delayed or chosen not to act with the power that we do have. And so I don't see this as an individual person, you know, possessing some rare personal quality or character trait. It is the lived experiences of knowing what it means when government doesn't work and people fall through the cracks, matched with the privilege and blessing I've had to now be able to be on the other side of that, inside government for a decade now, working for Mayor Menino, and now eight years on the city council, seeing that we can close these gaps. We can make a huge difference when we choose to, and when we choose to take on those actions.
You said a minute ago, you used the word reasonable, that it ought to be reasonable for families. What's reasonable housing for families in the city of Boston? What does reasonable look like?
Well, we even have clear standards that have been set by the federal government, right? That when you earn an income, no more than 30% of what you're earning should be going to paying your housing. More than that, and you are starting to have difficulty paying your bills and the other parts of your lives, much less what everyone deserves, which is the ability to also support having fun and taking time with your family and being with friends and enjoying the leisure and nightlife and entertainment in your community. But what we know is that in Boston, nearly two-thirds of our residents are renters. Half of all of our renters are paying more than that affordable share of their income. And nearly a third of our renters are paying more than half of their income every year to housing. And that is not sustainable or reasonable for anyone in any situation. And so housing is, as we've seen in the pandemic, it's not just where you lay your head at night and where you go when it's cold outside. It is health. It is life or death. It is your childcare situation, potentially, how close you are to the supports you need in your community. It is opportunity. And it is perfectly reasonable for us to expect, demand, and fight for everyone to have that stability in our city.
Why do you call it rent stabilization instead of rent control? Is it something different? Is it a different phrase for the same thing?
I lean into the fact that we need to take every possible step, use every possible power that city government could have to keep families in their homes. You know, according to some in the more technical practice of what these policies mean, some do see rent control as differently from rent stabilization. Rent control meaning more of the dictating of exact rent levels, maybe a rent freeze or guardrails on how much can be charged for what situation, and rent stabilization, talking more about the increase or the rate of change of those rents. And so broadly, when I'm asked, as I have been in the lovely dozens and dozens of candidate forums that we've had this year, if someone says, are you for rent control? I say, we need the ability for city government to do all that we can to keep people in their homes. And so, yes, I support city government having the authority to be able to act. If I'm asked, what exactly do you mean and what would you propose day one? We have seen examples from other jurisdictions, the state of Oregon, for example, where if you can pair the ability to create more housing and move that faster and allow for the supply of affordable housing to grow and match what's needed, and you prevent bubbles in the short term, you prevent people from getting pushed out in the very, very short term by putting some guardrails around how quickly rents can go up, that is how we have a multifaceted, comprehensive strategy to keep people in their homes.
As I understand it, in Oregon, what they essentially do is cap increases at 7%.
Plus inflation. So it's ended up being about 9.25%. They have done some analysis of what the impacts have been. Have there been any unintended consequences? Because one argument that's always pulled out as well, if you prevent people from making money on housing by somehow addressing rents or keeping them lower than they should be, then no one will build and there will be no new supply added for affordability. But in fact, when you have those guardrails, you can keep people in their communities. It does not make it so that we're halting growth or freezing development. We are able to pursue all of this in a very comprehensive, nuanced way.
So the piece of that I still don't fully understand is, how is that short term? You've said it a number of occasions that you understand that rent control or rent stabilization is a short term measure, and then in the long term can be problematic, is my word, not yours. But in a case like Oregon, I mean, they're doing that every year. So how do you do something like this in the short term and then undo it? Is that realistic?
We have the data, the technology, the information to know exactly how our housing crisis is being experienced, neighborhood by neighborhood, block by block even. And there are other cities who have created what they call displacement risk index to measure census tract by census tract what is the experience of families on the ground? How quickly have housing prices gone up in this particular sub-neighborhood? What is the proportion of renters relative to homeowners? What is the median income there? What are the language barriers? What are the demographics? And when you can map out neighborhood by neighborhood, block by block, what the situation is, then we can be very intentional about how to deploy policy tools. Because the reality is very different in terms of what's happening in East Boston compared to Roxbury or Mattapan or Jamaica Plain in Roslindale. And we can't treat each area in the same way if we are going to make sure that we're doing everything we can to keep families in our in homes in Boston.
That was Boston City Councilor and mayoral candidate Michelle Wu speaking at a live town hall at WBUR City Space last night. We'll have a link to the full WBUR town hall on our website, radioboston.org. And again, join us Thursday night, 7 p.m., for the second town hall with Boston City Councilor and mayoral candidate Anissa Saibi-George. For tickets and to submit your own questions in advance, you can go to wbur.org/events. And we hope to see you there.